So, and really, Francis, I think that a lot of people think that it has to be a certain way for legal reasons, and that's not always the case. Sometimes I think that there's what I believe to be a misguided belief that we have to sound official and that we have to use legal language, and sometimes we do. And if we do, what we tried to do in our notices is to use the plain language explanation, but then if the lawyers told us you have to have this, you know, would they consider it the magic language, then we would put it in parentheses, you know, to have the legal language so that it would stand up in court if that's what it needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, we were able to use plain language pretty much. We were able to negotiate back and forth with the attorneys and with the business, and all of us kind of come to a good understanding of what's really going to fly.
What is the hardest part when you're going through a document and either building it from scratch so that it is fairly easily readable, or going back to something that you have in the archives that's used year after year after year, but that you go, okay, it's time to clean this up and make this work a little bit better?
I think the hardest part is being able to look at it fresh. Because, you know, all of us in government, we all know our jobs pretty well, and we do our jobs. And so sometimes it's not easy for us to recognize that what we're explaining in a notice going out to somebody who doesn't understand the process, it's hard for us to see that it's really not that clear, because we understand it so well,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I think that that's the toughest part, is to be able to recognize, hey, you know, we might think that this is language that everybody uses, but it's not. In the IRS, you know, we always use this term, you know, for money that people owe us, we always say tax liability. Well, why don't we just say the tax you owe? And that seems like such an easy thing, but I think that people sometimes just make assumptions of the things that other people understand because we understand it.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's true in my business, too, when I go home and talk to my wife about things, and she says, I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
So that makes perfect sense. Now, there were two things in the judge's comments on this document that I thought were really interesting. They said IRS used a lot of active voice and avoided subordinate sentences. Was that something you set out to do? Did you think of it in those grammatical terms, or did you just think, we just want to make this easier for people to get?
I think we thought about it in terms of trying to be more conversational and trying to be engaging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that when you use active voice and when you use the personal pronouns, when you use contractions, that was a big one for us to convince the business that it was okay to use contractions. but that's the way that people speak.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're more conversational in your tone, I think that people have an easier time just comprehending it, understanding it, and it's easier to get people engaged. And that's what we want people to do. We either want them to, you know, do what we're asking them to do, whether it be pay up or send us something.
Uh-huh.
But if they can't pay us, then we want them to engage with us. We want them to be able to engage in a conversation. And they need to be able to at least get through the notice before they'll even do that, you know. So it's just really about having that conversational tone and having that courteous and professional and friendly tone, you know, without having to sound official and, you know, make it hard.
When the Plain Language or Plain Writing Act came out and you first started to review it and understand, okay, we're going to have to change some things and so on and so forth, were there things that you saw early on that you thought, oh, well, this is going to be a lot more difficult than I expected, or things that you saw and you thought, oh, this is a snap, we'll be able to do this, that's a great idea?
I don't think that I saw anything that would be a snap. However, I did say, oh, well, we've got a big jump on this. And
uh-huh.
In fact, it's one of the reasons why I think they put me in charge of it for the agency, was because we were already going down this road. I think that the hardest thing is going to be, I think, just going through the volumes of documents, covered documents that we have. Also, there are provisions, as you probably know, that we have to train all of our employees. We have 100,000 employees.
Mm-hmm.
And so thankfully the OMB guidance, you know, gave us different levels of training. But also, the good news is we don't have to reinvent the wheel, because the Plain Language Action Information Network, they have a website, plainlanguage.gov. They have training that they've already developed that government agencies can use. I think that they've also got what's it called? It's webuniversity.gov,
mm-hmm.
Webmasters University, something like that. But webmanagersuniversity.gov. They've got training there. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We will probably be using a lot of the training that's already existing to teach or to train our employees that write covered documents. But I don't think that it's going to be anything that's really that's difficult. It's just that there's a lot to do in a short period of time.
Well, congratulations on this award. I hope you got a nice like plaque or cup or something.
Oh, yeah, we got a beautiful award.
Fantastic.
Very nice, except we have to give it back next year. Kind of like the Stanley Cup. You know, we get to keep it for a year, and then we have to give it to the next winner.
Well, but if it's like the Stanley Cup, that means you can take it around and let everybody get their pictures taken with it.
Oh, yeah. I guess we'll have to do that.
So there you go. And when you get some of those, send them in, and we'll put them on federalnewsradio.com so people can see it.